Some kind of a joke or a trick was being played.
You men say you want our women, but your women say no. But men lie. You not want them. Why is it that you not want our women?
No reason. Just the way we come from.
The dark land of death?
No. Well, yeah. Back there we pick our own women.
Dean was already asleep on the grass-filled mattress in the far corner of the kitchen. He'd dragged it there without anything being said. Though there wasn't even a curtain between the two parts of the house, he gave Christy and his father a semblance of privacy and modesty. They lay together, Ryan having done no more than take off his heavy combat boots. He had suggested to the rest of the friends that they take care sleeping, not post a watch, but not get undressed, in case something roused them fast in the middle of the night. And they were to keep their weapons close to hand. He reached out and put his arm around Christy, feeling for the warm swell of her breast. But she eased away from him.
Sorry, lover. Wrong time of month.
Tomorrow?
Likely.
It'll be nice. He could almost feel her grinning in the smoky darkness.
Sure it would. If you want it real bad, lover, then I'd be happy to slide down and give you...
Nah, not tonight. I like it to be two-sided.
She sat up and patted him on the cheek.
Hey, not bad. Not bad for you, lover.
Outside, the village was falling into sleep. Itzcoatl had told them that the warriors always kept a watch, though they didn't expect the slavers to run at them again for at least another month. That had become the pattern of their savage raids. But there was always the threat from the jaguar people out there in the blackness of the forest. Ryan awoke once in the night. The fire had crumbled into itself, leaving only a pile of white ash, speckled with tiny glowing embers. Through the beaded curtain that was the front door to the hut, Ryan could see that it was a brilliant moonlit night, throwing sharp shadows across the dirt floor. Ryan wondered what had awakened him. There was slight pressure on his bladder from the Oakley that he'd drunk. The surprisingly potent liquor had also given him a sick headache, with pressure behind his eye. He decided to go and take a leak. It didn't seem a good idea to wander off and risk being shot by one of the guards. Ryan had noticed that some of the natives carried small leather pouches with rawhide thongs attached, stone-throwing slings. As well as the archaic blasters, they had bows with long arrows, and a few had blowpipes slung across their shoulders. Any of them could strike him down from the darkness unless he stepped carefully. He walked to the rear of the hut, looking out past two more buildings, seeing the surrounding fence through the gap. There was no sign of any sentries. Ryan felt the short hairs begin to prickle at his nape, and picked up both the Sig Sauer and the Ponga, holstering one and carefully sheathing the other. He stepped down into the open space, his head turning from side to side, suddenly realizing what had disturbed him. It crossed his mind to go back and wake Christy, to stir the others from sleep and go out to see if there was anything wrong. But there was always that moment of serious doubt that everything was fine, and he would have roused JB and the others for no good reason. Ryan moved with caution, picking his way between the houses toward the fence. His shadow preceded him, etched on the cropped grass of the compound. When he reached the perimeter, he stopped for a moment, puzzled that he hadn't yet seen any of the sentries or been seen by one of them. His hand had been hovering over the butt of his weapon, but now he relaxed a little. His eye caught a glimpse of a pair of naked feet sticking out from the deep shadow of the nearest building. Someone was either sleeping there, or something had gone seriously wrong in the village. Before he could try to rationalize what he'd seen, Ryan was dealt a crunching blow across the throat. He hadn't seen it coming and didn't have time to parry it successfully. He managed to get up his right hand to slightly deflect and dull the force of the hit, and if he hadn't, then he would certainly have been killed. Ryan staggered two steps away and slumped to his knees. The man who'd attacked him was an etched silhouette, holding a long club shaped like a baseball bat. He was certainly a native, but wore a necklace of teeth and claws from some kind of forest predator. A jaguar. Ryan ducked and rolled, trying to yell out a warning to the village, but his vocal cords had been damaged by the attack. There wasn't time to stand and try to draw either the Panga or the Sig Sauer. Any attempt to do so would have left him open to a lethal blow from the native. If he couldn't get away safely, then try to get in close. He ducked inside the third swing of the club, taking a glancing blow into the ribs. He grappled with the man. The native dropped his useless club, trying to knee Ryan in the groin. A half-turn parried it with his thigh, but it still hurt. Ryan tried to grab at his enemy's genitals, but the man was quicker, moving sideways and drawing him off balance, his own hands reaching up for a stranglehold. To negate the attack, Ryan pressed himself closer, pushing his face against the native's neck, sliding upward, and managing to get his arms around the barrel chest. Both men were already soaked in sweat. Ryan could hardly breathe through his damaged throat. And the nails on his adversary's stubby fingers were digging into his neck, clamping off what remained of his breath. The man dipped, trying to lift Ryan off his feet, but his opponent's slightly greater height defeated him. It occurred to him, like a shock of Sierra meltwater, that this nameless native from a stinking little village in the middle of nowhere was going to kill him. They struggled face to face, Ryan not daring to relax his grip on the man's body. Acting on a primitive atavistic impulse, Ryan opened his mouth and sunk his teeth into the man's carotid artery. The hands fell away from Ryan's throat, and he drew in a shuddering gasp of air, pushing Ryan away, and opened his own throat in the process. Ryan spat out the wad of meat in his mouth. While he took a couple of stumbling steps away, he reached for the cold butt of the 9mm blaster, leveled it, and squeezed the trigger.
Ah, I think I'd rather have had the rat brains.
The man's scream and the shot had roused the entire village. Within a handful of seconds, Ryan had Jack, JB, and Christy at his side, all carrying drawn weapons. JB had spotted the corpse lying crumpled by the tall fence. The necklace of claws and teeth glinted white. Christy touched Ryan by the arm.
You're shaking, lover.
She lifted her face to kiss him on the lips, her eyes showing hurt when he pulled away from her.
I'll tell you later.
The warriors of the village poured from their huts, carrying a rich variety of weapons, muttering to one another when they saw what the tall outlander had done to one of their most bitter enemies. Itzcoatl arrived at the hut, where Ryan was sitting with the others, telling them what had happened.
There were four of them. They come from the lakeside on logs that... What is word?
Drifted?
Yes, drifting logs. We think one guard slept, but his sister's youngest son was taken by the Jaguar people 2 moons ago. Perhaps he did what he was told to do, and still he died.
You catch them all?
The chief shook his head.
You killed one. We took two alive, but wounded. One escaped into the woods. Perhaps they will learn we have a god and his friends now fighting with us and not come again. Perhaps.
How many dead you got? Saw the one under the hut.
This is good news of good news and bad news. Two of my people have gone to help the rains fall and the wheat rise and become gold. They lost more than we lost.
Right glad to hear it. Yeah, I'm triple happy for you. Now, I'd like to get back to sleep.
The native nodded and walked out of the hut. JB, Doc, Mildred, and Jack stood and followed him, leaving Ryan alone with Christy and Dean.
What?
How did you bite the guy's throat out?
Go to sleep, son. Just go to sleep.
There was one further disturbing footnote to the night's battle. As the outlanders all went blinking into the early morning sunlight, Smoking Crest, the elder of the council, began to explain to them about the funeral arrangements they were making for the two dead warriors.
It is always our way that we go back into Earth in place of homes.
You mean that it is your practice to inter your fallen comrades inside the village?
Yes. No.
Which?
In village. But more, in house where living. One you saw, you sleep in his hut, moved out for you, now must be buried there, under floor.
Under the floor of the hut we're sleeping in? He'll rot and stink us all out.
The native shook his head, smiling at the boy, showing his filed teeth, the inlaid jade glittering in the sun.
No stink, you see. We have way of doing